All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. This is another edition of Conversation with Dr. Cowan and Friends. I always try to remember what the name of this podcast is, but I think that's right. So this one is going to be a series of three, which I'm very excited about. And that is because as probably some of you, maybe many of you, maybe most of you know, we decided to do a new biology clinic. When I say we, it sort of came about because my son Asher, who's the, you know, sort of the CEO of our companies, he's been hearing me complain about medicine and biology and all that for, you know, he's 39, I think, probably 30 years. And finally says, so are you going to ever do anything about this? You know, and so I had my practice, but I didn't know what to do about it. So it was his idea, really, to say, okay, we should form a clinic in the beginning online and then maybe actual brick and mortar thing and see if we can help people with your ideas. I mean, what a concept. So I couldn't say no, because otherwise I would seem like I was afraid of having my ideas put into practice, right? So that would be lame on my part. And so over the years, I've been, you know, talking to different doctors, sort of mentoring them, although I don't really like that word, but something like that. And so then in January, I think we started the clinic, and somebody that I'd known for a while, Adam, and he started seeing people who wanted our help. And I mean, I'm not saying I was surprised, but it went really well. People got, you know, liked talking to Adam. They liked the approach. They got better. We've heard some amazing stories with very simple things. And eventually then it got so that Adam was sort of full. You know, there was no more room for him to see people. And so then people had to wait. And one of the things in my practice, my entire career, I never liked having people either wait in the waiting room or wait to have an appointment. I mean, to a certain extent, it's inevitable a little bit, but I mean, I was always on time. If your appointment was at 10, you got in at 10, because I just thought it was rude and arrogant to make people sit there and wait for 2 hours. I didn't like it. And if you have a health problem, to say, okay, yeah, you have a health problem, wait 6 months and then I'll talk to you, that just doesn't seem right. Anyways, so we put out a call to see if anybody wanted to join the the clinic. And I thought we would get a few people, but turns out, I don't know, at last count, we've had about 60 people interested in joining us. And so then that was a little surprising, but that's, I guess, a good surprise. So we started talking to people. And one of the people that I talked to was Rodney. And I'll let him explain his background. But I was looking for people who could do this, you know, who actually understand what I mean by new biology. And we're not talking functional medicine here, right? That's a whole different thing. And it's a whole different way of seeing it. And some people get it and some people just don't. I don't know why, you know. Anyways, it was very clear to me that Rodney, and then there was two other doctors who are going to join us. So we're going to actually have a group. And that's really exciting, because then when you have a group, you can actually compile your what happened and what you found out and what worked for people. And then your learning goes way up quickly. When you're by yourself, it's a long slog. So, you know, when people are working together, that's really makes it work. So the point of this is really to welcome Rodney and to let Rodney have a chance to say, it's really just two questions, you know, who are you and why would you want to join a something called a new biology clinic? I mean, what reason would you want to do that? So with that, welcome, and I'll let you introduce yourself and then maybe explain a little bit, because you have a specialty, how you would treat people, you know, maybe with a certain examples, you know, like what would it look like for people to say, okay, I'm going to talk to that guy about my such and such.
Good. Good morning. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate your time having me here and letting me introduce myself. I'm from Ecuador. You may know that already, but I was born and raised in South America and I came to the States about over 30 years ago. Early in my life, I somehow developed a passion to become a neurologist. I was like in my seven or eight year old. And I
really
wanted to figure out how to fix patients with Parkinson.
And when you were seven.
Yes. And
did you know anybody with Parkinson's?
No, not really. I was so intrigued about the connections between the basal ganglia, the thalamus, and all of that. And no one in my family has been a physician. The only memories I have with doctors when I was a child was the doctor coming in the house to see my grandfather. You know, he will come with a little black bag and a stethoscope. You know, he looked pretty much like a neurologist now. But he wasn't a neurologist, he was a GP, and he will come in the house and examine the patient, give his prescription, and then leave.
Yeah.
But yeah, my interest was very early about neurology, and I overall liked how the brain works and how to figure it out, you know, like a little mechanic, you know, boy trying to unassemble the pieces and put them back together.
Yeah, got it.
So through the years, my passion was to become a neurologist, no matter what, even in high school. And then when I went to medical school, that was my primary objective. I became so centered into not only learning neurology, but teaching neurology to medical students through my medical school. Uh-huh. And I was fortunate enough to be sort of an assistant professor of neuroanatomy, which is different on the system here, American system. You cannot do that when you're a medical student. But after my training ended, I was going to do neurology residency in Chile, one of the major South American training programs, but life changed and end up here in the States. I did my training in neurology in Medical University of South Carolina, and eventually fellowship in critical care and stroke care and neurology, really advanced into intensive care.
Wow.
I have to say, we do have some things in common. You were an ER physician, and through the years, I also have worked in the ER for over 25 years already, based on experience. I'm not certified on emergency medicine.
Yeah.
So we do share that in common. The other thing that I will say we share in common is that you have said in previous podcasts that after 35 years of doing medicine, you were done with it. And, you know, I'm getting close to that. Another 2 more years, I'm going to be like you, Tom. I'm done with conventional Western medicine, modern medicine, because it has failed us in how we approach conditions that patients suffer that, you know, Western medicine called diseases. And so that is the primary motivation for me to join your clinic and to be available as a service to people, not to patients, but to people who are really wanting to get healing from within and to find the right answers to what are their symptoms or manifestations they have, because these are manifestations are just signals the body's giving them as a call out to fix something. And so Western medicine, unfortunately, has, you know, committed a fraud to us over more than 100 years now, that in this time, that, you know, talking about diseases without talking about the causes of diseases, so what really affects each individual in a different way, because everybody is different and there are not diseases, but there are people, individuals suffering from a different ailment that we have to figure out, help them figure out and realize to empower themselves to heal.
So let's take this back a little bit. So you come to the United States. Were you fluent in English then?
No, not at all. I couldn't even say good morning to you.
Wow.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I had some English. That was one of my worst subjects that I couldn't get. But then eventually, when I got in the States, I started listening to the TV and reading the newspaper, talking to people. I think that I learned English here talking to other people.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of evolution. I have to take my boards here to practice medicine. And it helped me to read medical textbooks in English while I was in medical school.
Yeah.
And so I learned through experience, basically.
So you did medical school in Ecuador, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So then you did your residency in neurology in University of South Carolina.
Correct.
So at what point did you start to say, you know, I've been hoping to do this and wanting to do this my whole life, but something isn't right here. Like what were you seeing then that got you to think about that?
Well, like most practitioners of that are in our same frequency, I will say, there was a moment in life that I realized something wasn't working well for my body. I started gaining weight. My blood pressure went up, cholesterol went up. I went to a doctor and said, you have fatty liver. And I said, what's going on with my body? I mean,
About how old were you then?
They was talking about early 2000s, so about in my late 30s.
Uh-huh. So and before so, that, you weren't aware of any questions, really?
No, not really. No, I was basically, you know, very obedient of the traditional teaching of medicines.
Yeah.
You know, I was very actually intrigued in medical school to go into my fourth year and learn about the clinical part, you know, how to diagnose a disease, because once I mastered that, I thought, well, I can treat it. And now I'm sort of a big shot. You know, I'm the doctor now, finally.
Yeah, right.
So that was the goal. And the training is to figure out what disease I'm dealing with to do the so-called treatment.
Yeah.
And it followed that paradigm, you know, like every other doctor goes through, thinking that we're doing the best for the patient.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main point. That paradigm is not right. It's broken. It's deceiving, misleading. And it doesn't take us anywhere because, like you have said before, talking about viruses, when you start trying to find a part of that virus that doesn't exist to begin with, you know, how are we going to fix something if we don't have the main part put together?
Right. So your so-called awakening or revelation came because you noticed things in you that weren't right. And so you went to a doctor and he said something and you said, I don't know about this.
Yeah, I didn't, they wanted to put me on some medication for cholesterol, and I don't recall what other things they want me to do, but I eventually had to search for myself and started looking into textbooks and other biology books, trying to find answers. The first revelation was nutrition, obviously, and changed my diet. It definitely was a lifestyle change, all what had happened for me to recover my health and take me in a new path to figure out what really was the industry or the medical system or the modern medical Western medicine doing to us. It was wrong, that there are better ways to do it.
And at what point did you sort of apply that to general medicine or what you were seeing with neurology? How did that come about?
It was hard at the beginning because you live like in two worlds. You know, you have a job and you're committed to the job. You have a family and so on. And so you have to follow rules for sure, especially if you work in a hospital setting.
Yeah.
But even then, I started talking to patients. You know, like nowadays, if I see a patient even in the hospital after having had a stroke or something else, I talk to them about what could have been the problems that started this situation, and not necessarily focusing to just medications or the medical treatment they're receiving at the time. And so having one foot on one side and in the other is not an easy thing to do, but eventually you realize that, you know, you cannot continue doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
That's the definition of insanity. And I think that from from that definition, many doctors who are trained in the US or the Western world suffer the same condition, doing the same thing over and over without realizing what they're doing.
Did you ever have conversations with your fellow neurologists or fellow ICU doctors, or say, you know, I don't think, you know, we got this guy with Parkinson's and, you know, we give him the drugs and he gets a little better and then he gets worse and he's got a lot of side effects. I don't really think this is going well. Did you have those conversations or not so much?
I do. I especially do it with the new generation, medical students that come do rotations with me. I don't go to the traditional neurology teaching with them in the sense, I mean, of course, I get them through the rotation, but at the same time, I start revealing to them that in reality, things work differently than were being presented. So I do discuss it with my residents, students, and some colleagues. And then some colleagues, you know, you can talk to them and they see you like you have horns in your head and don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, a lot of them, they agree and they understand that they're doing the wrong way, but they just are kind of trapped by the system.
Yeah.
So I do think that majority of physicians understand the paradigm. They just cannot get out of it.
Yeah. So did you start looking for, okay, so this way we're taught and what we do isn't cutting it, isn't working the way I would hope. And then inevitably you start with diet, and then what?
Well, for myself, are you talking about?
Yeah, and just in general with medicine.
In general, yeah. And so you start realizing that everything boils to lifestyle, and the pillars of your health have to do with how you go about doing the things on a regular day-to-day basis since the moment you're born, what environmental factors you're exposed to, what emotions you have, who raised you, you know, who do you love, what do you eat,
yeah,
you know, do you exercise, do you have a time to yourself? And so every of those things that are stimuli from the outside world and our inner world, they all become frequencies that affect our vibrations. And those can lead to different manifestations depending on how those vibrations are flowing to your body. Are there blockages in there or not? Are these vibrations the right vibrations, or they're getting stuck in your system and preventing you from making progress or getting to a healthier state? And so every single thing is boiled down to signals, whether it's light, sound, whether it's food or a toxin, it eventually leads to a signal change or a vibration change in your body that creates a dysfunction. Or
it sounds like at some point, you know, one of the fundamental shifts is, you know, we learn as doctors that we're basically a chemistry set. At some point, some of us think, I don't think it's just a chemistry set, or even I don't even think it's at all a chemistry set. We're electromagnetic beings, you know, and you just talk about frequency and vibration, and that's a whole different picture of what's actually happening. So it sounds like at some point you started making that shift.
Definitely. And especially in regards to the brain, you know, the brain is pretty much electric. And we as physicians, we studied the brain with electrical machines, you know, what EEG and MRIs is all about resonance and frequencies. So obviously the brain is electric and it communicates with the body, especially with the heart. The heart is the major electric center of the body. And so the whole system integrates the gut, the heart, the brain, but it's all electromagnetic, like you said, you know, and that is affected by everything that we do, see, or eat, or get exposed to.
Right. And once you get, I tell you that it's a great way to put it, because once you see that, you then start looking for different solutions.
Correct.
Because you can't look for chemical solutions to, and I mean, chemicals have an effect, right? But they're not, that's not there. You start looking at, you know, what our frequency thing, what does sound do? What does light do? All this stuff.
Exactly right.
Yeah. All right. So there you are. And now you're starting to look into, so how do I treat people? Like, what do I do? Maybe even with Parkinson's, like, what do I do about that?
Right. Well, because these conditions or the manifestations or any neurological disorder that we talked about, they're so-called categorized into diseases, whether you call it Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, is irrelevant because it's all part of a spectrum of different manifestations depending on each patient's experience.
Yeah.
And so...
So the first, just let me stop you. The first revelation is this separate disease category. That is an artificial construct, which has no bearing on actual people.
That's correct. Yeah. And that's very confusing because once you zero into that or you get thinking that you're going to treat that condition, you totally, you know, miss the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so first we have to kind of erase out of our mindset that there are those conditions for one thing, or whether it's right. MS or anything like that.
And yeah. then you're second, not a victim of Parkinson's.
Right. No, you don't have Parkinson's. And so once you get that out of your mind, then you have to figure out how the patient got there.
Yeah.
There must be a reason for it. And a lot of times the symptoms start many, many, many years after the problem has begun. So we're talking about 25, 30 years into the works by the time somebody says, oh, I'm losing my memory, or I'm missing things, or I have this tremor, or can feel this side of my body. And so the key here is to figure out throughout those years, what are the different factors that affected an individual? Basically about how, like you have said it before in your approach, is by finding the story of that patient.
And so how do you do that? Like, what's your technique of doing that? I can guess.
Yeah. Well, basically go through an extended history and their experiences from the time they were well, or even before they were feeling well. What was your childhood like? What were you exposed to when you were a child? Even about what was your mother experiences or your father experiences? Where did you live? What were you exposed to? What was your childhood? What did you eat? What kind of dental procedures they did to you? What kind of injury you had? You know, and so all of these things matters to the individual eventually over the years to lead to a dysfunction or alteration of their frequencies that affects the brain as well.
Got it. And so at some point they start having symptoms, which then get categorized and et cetera. And then what? What do you do at that point?
Basically provide that individual the realization of, you know, how is that they got there in order for them to recover it, to give them some guidance on how to do it and implement different, whether it's changes in the lifestyle or different interventions that they can implement into their life in order to, let's call it, reverse the process or ameliorate the imbalances or blockages they have in order to restore that energetic field or frequency that was blocked before for whatever condition or whatever inciting factor.
Yeah. And that's medicine.
And that's it. That's real medicine.
Yeah. And by the way, Rodney is not only going to see people with neurological problems, because everything you're saying applies to people with sore throats and toenail fungus and cancer and heart disease and any other sort of label you want to slap on people.
That's correct. Yeah, it doesn't matter, because another flaw of Western conventional medicine is the compartmentalization of diseases and specialties. You know, even though I'm so-called neurologist by my certificate, I don't think in my mind as a neurologist want to talk it to an individual. Because if I think that way, I'm thinking, oh, I can only take care of your brain, but that's not possible for me to help them if I'm just looking at the brain. Same thing, cardiologists say, I look at the heart, the lung doctor takes care of the lung, and the kidney doctor. So it's like a splitting of the body when we're missing the point.
Right. There's no actual split. So it's an artificial split.
That's not how the body works.
Yeah. And then my guess is you over the years have become familiar with diet and grounding and different energy devices and maybe chlorine dioxide or whatever, you know.
Yeah, there is a whole constellation of interventions and therapies that can help people regain their health and their frequency. I was just listening last night about hydrogen and the brain and the research that is out there and to improving the hydrogen content of the body, but specifically of the brain for a, you know, series of conditions that we call diseases of the brain. I think there's a device, AquaCure.
AquaCure. Adam has had a lot of people use that. And again, that's something that, you know, being part of our group, you know, we will have cases of, and not that anything is written in stone, but, you know, okay, we did AquaCure, what happened, you know?
Yeah, one thing's work for somebody, other things may not work because... Again, the patient will have to tell you what is their problem and what's their history, and to find the fine tuning for them may be different from another individual.
Yeah. All right. I think that's a pretty good description of who you are and what you've done. I think everybody can see why we wanted Rodney to be part of it. But well, our clinic. Before you go, though, this may not be fair, but I'm going to ask you a question and see. You may not have even thought about this, but I would love to hear your take. And everybody should know this is out from left field, so to speak. Rodney may never have heard this question before, but so it's a little bit unfair. But do you have a theory or a hypothesis as to why general anesthesia works?
When you mean anesthesia to put people to sleep?
Yes. So guy comes in to have his gallbladder out, you go to the anesthesiologist, he gives you some gas or some chemicals, shoots you up. Next thing you know, you're asleep. Like, what happened?
He blocked a frequency.
How does that work? How did he do that?
Well, you know, the medications that are used or infusion, you know, whether it's propofol or ketamine, you name it, they're supposed to have a chemical component that blocks supposedly your consciousness and your pain pathways and things like that. But I think that at the same time, they carry a frequency that affects your stimulation in your inner, in your consciousness, in your activating pathways. So something has to happen from the effect, because every one of those infusions or medications carry a vibrational frequency of certain impact. And so I think that, you know, like in Chinese medicine, you know, they do anesthesia, they do heart surgery with pinpointed a needle into a point, and they said the patient didn't have any pain.
You can cut you right open.
It affected a frequency field. I think that in conventional medicine, they do the shotgun approach. They block a whole series of frequencies. You're out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I haven't thought about it in that way until you asked me the question. But
I know it was an unfair question, but anyways.
But I think that in a more practical way, that's what I will say about what happens to that individual.
So let me run another theory by you and see what you think, because I haven't had a chance to run this by a neurologist. I think that, let's say it's a hypothesis, but I think it's accurate, that nerves are highly structured water.
Right.
Surrounded by a fatty coating called myelin, like a copper wire. So the nerve is like the copper, and then there's the rubber part around it. And the reason it's highly structured water is that's because structured water liberates what we call electrons. I'm not sure that's actually correct, but at least some negatively charged entity. And that's what creates current. And current is what makes a nerve work. So I think that these anesthetics are highly polar charged chemicals and they actually go in there and destructure, essentially make a puddle out of the nerve. And then when the flow hits the puddle, stops. Can't get to the other side. So you don't feel anything on the other side.
So a blockage in that area.
Yeah. And the brain is, you know, like instead of 70% water, it's like 80%. It's like water bag. And so it's the most highly structured water. So they give you these chemicals or breathe these chemicals, which destructure your water in your brain a little bit. And then this intricate relation with consciousness and the brain, the brain isn't consciousness, but it's the vehicle that the consciousness uses. And that's disturbed because it's disturbed the structure of the water in the brain. And so then you're asleep.
Right.
And then when you that wears off, you restructure your brain and you wake up again. That's my guess as to how it works. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, it does make sense to think about the brain as a water covered with insulation, of course, because that's basically what we are made of.
Yeah.
And that system communicates, you know, our thoughts and our emotions and make us, you know, move our arms and legs. And I think that's what many things that affect the brain are related to that process.
Yeah.
Whether it's EMS from your cell phone or an emotion, it creates that blockage of that insulating system.
Yeah.
You know, I think the things can happen with MS patients, you know, say, oh, you have a plaque there, or the plaque is caused by autoimmune condition, but no, something is causing that blockage there because the patient has ingested the substance or have been given a toxic vaccine or different other factors, a metal or antibiotic or you name it, things that don't belong in the body, and the blockages are created and damage to the tissue. And that's what I call MS.
Yeah, exactly. And then with these ones that have to do with the myelin, it's probably some combination of the wrong fats, right, in the diet. They're eating toxic fats and fat-soluble poisons,
right?
You know, insecticides or whatever, or aluminum, et cetera. And that's affecting the formation of this fatty covering. And then you get inflammation and they blame it on the antibodies, which it's ridiculous.
It's insane.
Yeah. All right. I think we got it here. Because I think it's absolutely clear that you're in the right place here.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm so excited. And thank you again, Tom, for having me today.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, this is your 67th chapter of Dr. Cowan and Friends. I keep track of it.
Oh, is that right? Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, Rodney, it was a pleasure, and I'm so looking forward to being part of our 5-person group, and I think there are even going to be more as time goes. And it's really great for me to have a chance to, you know, throw these ideas out and people, no, Tom, that's not, you know, but what about this? If you do this frequency, it's just, that's really what we're doing, why we want to do this, because we get to talk to somebody who knows how to say, hey, wait a minute, that's not the way it works. Yeah, because we didn't get that in regular medicine. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay.
Okay, Rodney.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.